Hechel Menachem presents A Tale of Two Souls, an ongoing lecture series on the Tanya by Rabbi Yosef Yitzchak Jacobson. This is recording number 111 in the series entitled The Ballad of Unity, Putting All of Life into Perspective. This class was recorded live at Hechel Menachem, Brooklyn, New York, during the winter of 5761.
Good evening to everybody. It would be interesting to note that Chav Kislev, the 20th day of Kislev, was the day that the first Tanyas came off the printing press in 1796. It was on a Tuesday, the 20th of Kislev, Tovkuf Nun Zion, and the first Tanyas, 15,000 copies, were published in the Slavita that day, that year. The following year, a second edition with 20,000 copies was published, and so on and so forth. So that occurred on the 20th day of Kislev, which is today, Chav Kislev. In this chapter, the 41st Perek Bamalef of the Tanya, the Alter Rebbe motivates the Jew to evoke within himself or herself a feeling, or at least an intellectual feeling, of yira, of awe, as well as a feeling, or at least an intellectual feeling, of love towards Hashem as a prerequisite to the Torah he studies, the davening, the praying, as well as the mitzvahs that he or she performs. The Alter Rebbe continued that awe and love are innately found within the very psychological chemistry of every single Jew. He must, however, recall it. He must tune into it. He has to believe in it and access it. And after this preparation of tuning in on some level, again, either in an emotional, intense level, or at least on a more intellectual, conviction-like level, after this preparation, should he proceed to serve Hashem every single day, whether it's the davening, or the learning, or the doing mitzvahs. So first of all, the Jew should inspire himself, so to speak, should tell himself, meditate, that I am essentially spiritual. I am essentially godly. There is an holiness that is embedded within my very essence. I want to cleave to Hashem. I want to become one with Hashem. And now you begin the work. The Torah, the mitzvahs, the davening. The Alter Rebbe discussed various levels in love, one level beyond another level. In fact, the level that he said is not accessible to the ordinary person in a very truthful way, although part of it and a minute element of it every Jew experiences. But the common denominator is that there is some level of profound love and spirituality in every Jew, and now we will continue inside. We'll begin from the period, Daflin Chesamid Aleph, in the center of the page, after the period. Avol Yichud Nafshei V'Iskalulusa. Ba'or Hashem Li'Islachadim, however, notwithstanding the above-mentioned deep levels that are not necessarily accessible totally to each human being, but the union of the person's own soul with and its absorption into the energy of Hashem, liyos lachad, and making them one, bazech chafitz kol adam Yisrael be'emes lamiti legamri. This is what every member of the Jewish people desires in absolute and utter truth, b'chal lev u'b'chal nefesh, with all his heart and all his soul, beyond the pale of a doubt. Me'av ativis ha'masoteres b'lev kol Yisrael, because of the natural love that is hidden in every Jewish heart. L'dof k'ba Hashem to cleave to Hashem, v'loy liparid v'liyis nichris v'nivdil chas v'shalom e'ichudi v'achdus yizbarach b'shom eifin, and not under any circumstances to be parted or separated, heaven forbid, from his blessed unity and oneness, afilu b'mesiris nefesh mamish, even at the cost of one's very life. And this is essentially the foundation for the statements and the declarations the Alter Rebbe made in this chapter. You see, the truth is that when one reads this chapter in particular, and I think many of us sitting around this table got this feeling as well learning this chapter, 41, a lot of it seems very, very foreign. The Alter Rebbe discusses here at length, relatively speaking, the emotional, internal experience that ought to accompany the Jew and the Yiddishkeit of the Jew. And very often, it seems quite alien. It's hard to identify personally, I mean really personally, with the concepts and the demands that he addresses in this chapter. And it's always and therefore important to emphasize and bear in mind the nature of the Tanya, which is the Sefer Shel Beinonim, the book for the Beinonim, for the intermediate man, or rather for the ordinary Jew. And these two, and therefore the entire book really consists of two extremes, I would say. Or operates on two levels. On one hand, the Alter Rebbe discusses in the Sefer real spirituality. The spirituality he explores is deep, authentic, profound, and powerful. It's not illusionary, superficial, easily accessible, so to speak, feel-good, Tylenol spirituality, anecdotal spirituality, a nice story, a nice melody, a good joke, and so forth. It's real spirituality. It's real transcendence. On the other hand, and that is its uniqueness and its magic in a way, but the magic is not really the word. Its specialness is that in the very book, he constantly addresses the perpetual failures, weaknesses, struggles of man. Our negative, animalistic, self-centered, beastly cravings, lusts, tendencies, urges, impulses. In other words, it is the real man he's addressing. You and you and I, the real people who feel our ego in a powerful way, and who sometimes or most of the times feel so alienated and detached from authentic, true transcendence, it's this person he's addressing. He's not addressing the tzaddik who's war-free. He's a war-free zone. He's transparent. There's no opaqueness. He's addressing the ordinary man, and it's to him whom he says that spirituality is a very true property of your psychological composition. And the same is true about the concepts of chapter 41 as well. The Alter Rebbe earnestly believed, he says this again and again, and he stated here just now what we just read, that many of us do not know really what is happening in our insides. He says, you have to get to know your soul. Your soul is a very heavy and extraordinary part of your life. But sometimes we are totally unaware of that gem, of that royalty he ascribes to us. It reminds me actually of an event that occurred on this day. Among Chabad, Chassidim in general, the 2 days, the 19th and 20th of Kislev, Yutes and Chav Kislev, are celebrated annually as Chag HaGeula, as the Festival of Liberation, in which the Alter Rebbe, the author of the Tanya, was liberated from Tsarist imprisonment 2 years after the publication of the Tanya in 1798, as a result of a very severe accusations brought against him, to the extent that there was the possibility for capital punishment being administered to the Alter Rebbe, and on the 19th of Kislev he was liberated. Why is the 20th of Kislev celebrated as well? The Alter Rebbe was let out of prison, where he was imprisoned on an isolated fortress in an island on the Neva River in Petersburg called the Peter Paul Fortress, where they imprisoned criminals of the worst degree. And that's where the Alter Rebbe suffered for more than 7 weeks. And on the 19th of Kislev, was on a Tuesday as well, actually, they let him out. And one of his big Hasidim, whose name was Reb Mardechai of Liepli, Reb Mardechai Liepler, lived in an apartment building in Petersburg. He did a lot of business there. So it was arranged, prearranged, that Alter Rebbe will go to his home. Now he lived in a building on one of the higher floors. The Alter Rebbe went into the first floor, and somehow, somewhere, he ended up in a Jewish home, but in the wrong home. In the home of one of his chief antagonists, one of the people who informed upon him to the Russian government. One of the leaders in the Misnagdisha world who persecuted Alter Rebbe, sadly, relentlessly, and transmitted his tragic Mesira informed upon him to the Tsar. And he ended up in his home. And the man who just suffered more than 7 weeks was now terrorized again. He just came out of prison. So first, when this Jew saw the Alter Rebbe, although he was a chief antagonist, but in the presence of the Alter Rebbe, he melted away. He was like overwhelmed, and he melted away, and he right away poured Alter Rebbe a cup of tea and asked him to sit down at the table. But then when he regained his composure, he began hollering at him. Why are you destroying Yiddishkeit? Why are you transforming and metamorphosizing the Torah? Is it not enough all the problems you did till now, and you're going to continue? You think you came out of prison, you ended up in this home, you're not leaving so fast, you're not going to be liberated so fast, your tzaras are just beginning, and so on and so forth. The Alter Rebbe was in his home for 3 hours. When 3 hours passed, Reb Mardechai Liepli, who was expecting the guest, his Rebbe, saw the Alter Rebbe was not here. So he was with another friend, a colleague, who was not a Chabad Chassid, was a Polish Chassid, a Chassid of one of the Hasidic masters of Poland. And they began worrying that perhaps it was a false alarm, and the rumor, the Misnagdim, spread that Alter Rebbe is not going to be liberated. They're actually going to send them away for life to an island detached from people is actually true. they thought that maybe the antagonist on the first floor has some confidential information. So they went down and they put their ear to the door to listen. Maybe there's some conversation in the home, they can pick up some news. And suddenly they hear a Jew screaming at another Jew, and he's saying, "Nakdishuch is achnish genug, kesed atecha is gefelt." The Alter Rebbe and his nusach of davening, based on the Kabbalah of the Arizal, changed that during Musaf on Shabbos, instead of beginning the Kedusha with Nakdishach and Chabad, they begin with Keser Yitnu Lecha. So he was hollering, "Nakdishach is not enough for you. You needed the Keser." Instead of Naritzach, I'm sorry. Instead of Naritzach, it's Keser. Musaf. Musaf on Shabbos, Rish Chodesh, Yom Tov, etc. So they right away understood who is he hollering at, the Alter Rebbe, who wrote a Siddur. The Alter Rebbe wrote a Siddur based on 60 versions. He chose, based on 60 versions, he edited a new Siddur. And they knocked on the door, they pounded on the door very, very hard. They were ready to break it down. And he opened up the door. They come in and they see the Alter Rebbe is sitting at the table, and tears are flowing from his eyes, and this man is screaming at him. The Alter Rebbe is sitting with his head down and not answering, just listening. And Reb Mordechai Lieple couldn't tolerate it. He was one of the Alter Rebbe's biggest chassidim. He ran over to this Jew and was ready to slap him. And the Alter Rebbe lifted his finger to him, said, signaled him that he should not touch this person. So Reb Mordechai right away backed off. The Chassid of Poland tells Reb Mordechai, he says, "This is your Rebbe, you're obligated to listen to him. I am not obligated to listen to him." And he gave this man what I believe he deserved. And as the story is told in Beis Rebbe, he did the Achas v'Achas, Achas v'Shtayim, Achas v'Shalosh, counting one on one, one on two, one on three. And he began screaming at him. He says, "You're screaming at the Alter Rebbe? You know who you're talking to?" And a Jew just came out of prison where he suffered. For days he didn't eat them. And it was a horrible ordeal he went through. And he said, "You know what you remind me of? Keser, that's what you're worried about. Keser." He said, "You remind me of..." There was a king who summoned the greatest designers and diamond connoisseurs to create a new crown for him. And when the crown was in the final moments of completion, the two greatest ministers of the country were debating where the final gem should be placed, in what position, how the keser, how the crown should come out. There was a peasant who was a janitor of the palace, and he was cleaning up the mud, and he mixed into the conversation, and he said, "I think that the crown ought to look like this and like this." So one of the ministers turned to him and he said, "You're a disgraceful human being. Who are you to mix in what type of crown the king should have? Vere de gemachta maven av de melech's ksarim. Who made you a maven on the crown of the king?" So he says, somebody can ask the Alter Rebbe why he changed from Naritzach to Keser. But who made you the expert on the crown of the king? So to be an expert, it brought to mind, to be an expert on the crown, on royalty, is a unique, extraordinary phenomenon. And the Alter Rebbe tells us here, as he did in the whole Tanya, that we ought to understand and realize the depth of the royalty, the gems and the crown that exist in every Jewish heart. And because of that crown, every Jew, notwithstanding his or her feeling about themselves, is truly capable of authentic transcendence and spirituality, sometimes beyond what we would imagine when we experience ourselves each day. And Alter Rebbe says that every Jew essentially experiences and harbors within his or her heart a nuclear love and affection to Hashem, a yearning to be one with Hashem, to connect with Hashem, to the extent, as he says, that with his whole heart, he wants to be one with Hashem, even if it's at the cost of his life. Which means that for the sake of this love, in the majority of cases, as he discussed earlier in Tanya chapter 18, the Jew is ready to give up his life. Not because he meditates, not because he contemplates, but because godliness is his essence. And when this dimension of his identity is exposed, he is one with Hashem. Hashem is the essence of a Jew's life. He chooses Hashem over physical life almost instinctively from the Alter Rebbe's point of view. And that's why in the majority of cases, history has proved sadly again and again, the unique phenomenon the Alter Rebbe described before and describes again here, that Jews from all creeds, so to speak, colors, backgrounds and affiliations, men, women and children from all countries and so forth, at the moment when they attempted to sever their connection to Hashem and to Judaism, in the majority of cases, they gave their very life for it. And it's something that's abnormal. You weren't dealing with the scholars, the Talmudists, the rabbis, the mystics. No, them we understand. You're dealing with Jews from all backgrounds and affiliations, even people who were lightheaded their entire life. It didn't happen in all cases. I mean, the most notable most probably would be Spain during the century of the Inquisition. In the 14th century and then the 15th century, approximately half of the population of Spain, or close to half, converted to Christianity. I think close to 250,000 Jews, which is the exception in Jewish history. Many of them became known as the Muranos and so forth. So I guess it was a public conversion, only the eyes of the public.
I said this before when you brought up this subject.
I remember, yeah.
Remember what I said? I said to you, in this country you have the phenomenon where there is no persecution and 150,000 Jews have become Meshulets. Why? And no.
I remember.
You know,
I remember.
I said,
yeah.
I got on tape too.
Can I say something that actually proves, I think, what the Alter Rebbe says? Because the fact is that 150,000 Jews with no spirituality in their lives gravitate to any spirituality rather than none.
Wait, I disagree with you because based on what the rabbi is saying, that there's the Jewish soul and spirit, no matter how, shall we say, secular. He should be holding on to his faith, but this is not happening.
The difference between giving up your life.
Yeah.
Which one's going to live? Where does live?
The butler, yeah.
Had to work very, very, very hard to give, to push down his Yetzirah Tov, give some acknowledgement to Yosef.
Yeah.
And he said that's what happened to, unfortunately, the Jews. They're in the forefront of communism and every ism. The Jews have to push down their Yetzirah Tov, and they take their energy and they do go 180 degrees the other way. And every sort of, they can't just be docile with their.
Okay.
But what about those Jews which I just mentioned have given up their faith?
They weren't forced.
I'm talking about right now.
It's a gravitation.
No, he has a point. Alter Rebbe is saying when faced with a life and death situation, naturally, in the majority of cases, almost instinctively, the Jew chooses Hashem over life. Why? Zog the Alter Rebbe, because at the core of the identity of the Jew, there is an essential, intrinsic, innate oneness with Hashem. Hashem is at the essence of his identity.
But on the other hand, Rabbi, I have found through personal experience that many non-Jews are gravitating toward Judaism, and I've met quite a number of them, including one ex-Protestant minister.
There was a famous Jewish convert whose name was Graf Potocki. Avram ben Avram. he came from Landshut in Poland and was burnt at the stake in Vilna on Shavuos. In his name, they say the following comment. If it's true, if it's not true, but it's attributed to him, the following idea, concept. The Gemara tells us in Avodah Zarah that prior to Hashem giving the Torah to the Jewish people, he took the Torah to every other nation in the world and offered it to them. And everybody rejected it. So he offered it to the Jewish people and they accepted it. So Graf Potocki asked, how is it possible that among all the nations there was not one person who wanted the Torah? And how is it possible that among all Jews from all generations there was not one Jew who rejected the Torah? And this extraordinary convert responded and he said, there were many non-Jews who craved the Torah and there were Jews who rejected the Torah. And indeed this emerges throughout history. Those non-Jews who craved the Torah somehow make their way into Yiddishkeit.
Uncles,
of course, and those Jews who rejected it somehow make their way out, which is certainly an interesting concept.
But it's interesting to note that the prophets say that
everyone who
drifts away from Judaism someday they're going to come back.
So this is what the Alter Rebbe is telling us here, that by virtue and by recalling what is happening within the ordinary Jew, every Jew is capable of tuning in and experiencing on some level authentic spirituality in his or her life. Do not underestimate yourself. Do not forget the nature of your soul. And the Alter Rebbe continues, being engaged in Torah and in the mitzvahs and in davening, who gamkin inyan mesidus nefesh mamsh, is also a matter of actual surrender of the soul. Just as when the soul leaves the body at the end of 70 years, she'eina meharheres b'tzarchi haguf, for then it does not think of bodily needs. Ela machshav de miyuchedes umalubeshes. Ba'oisiyas ha'teira v'hatfila. But its thought, in other words, the thought of the soul that is involved in Torah and davening, is united with and clothed in the letters of the Torah and the davening, Shehein Dvar Hashem Umachshavta Yizbarach, which are the word and the thought of Hashem, V'ho Yulacha Demamish, and they, the soul and the words of Torah and davening, which are Hashem's thought and speech, become one truly and absolutely. Shezeu Koleisek HaNesham is Began Eden. And this is the whole occupation of the souls in the Garden of Eden, Kidisa Bigamaro Bazoyar, as is stated in Gemara and in Zoyar. In various places, that the occupation of the souls in their afterlife in the Garden of Eden is basically in learning Torah. So the Alter Rebbe is saying, just as the soul is in its afterlife, which then it doesn't have any other concern in its life besides one concern, and that is learning Torah. The soul in its afterlife doesn't think about paying a mortgage, doesn't think about its savings account, doesn't think about a meal that will soon be arriving, a long-awaited sleep that will soon be arriving, a car that has to be fixed. Why not? Because at that stage in the game, so to speak, the soul doesn't have a body anymore. So the soul in its afterlife, its entire consciousness is identified exclusively with divinity or with the Dvar Hashem, with the Word of Hashem, with Torah and Davening. So the Alter Rebbe is saying that exactly in the same way is the true nature of learning Torah or observing mitzvahs or Davening, even when we find ourselves in this world. That at that moment, what is a true learning Torah? What is the definition of truly learning Torah, of truly davening, of truly doing a mitzvah? Is that at that moment, the Jew takes his soul and removes it from its bodily needs, and now he melts away in godliness. This is the true way in which the Jew ought to daven, ought to learn Torah, ought to do a mitzvah. That right now, I let go of my physical self and I give up my soul to Hashem. I belong to you. I become yours. So the Alter Rebbe is saying that true Torah and mitzvahs is Mesiras Nefesh. Is giving up, surrendering your soul to Hashem. What the soul experiences when she leaves the body, when the soul really leaves the body, when then it's identified exclusively with transcendence, there's nothing else she has to think about. She can't think about a leak that has to be fixed, a new car she needs, a rent that she has to pay, and so on and so forth. That is the same psychological situation of the Jew when he's truly engaged in Torah and davening and mitzvahs from the Alter Rebbe's perspective. So when you evoke this spiritual love within you, for which you are ready to give your very soul for Hashem, and now you go do a Torah and mitzvah, you are giving your soul. That is what davening means. Davening, from the Alter Rebbe's point of view, is you stand up by davening, let go from everything, just melt away now in the oneness of Hashem. And the same is true by learning, and the same is true during a mitzvah. Ella, however, he qualifies. Shasham, there in the Garden of Eden, there's a big difference. There, the soul's delight in their apprehension of and absorption into the energy of Hashem. The Garden of Eden, where the souls operate in our afterlife, is not an opaque world. It's a transparent, a translucent universe. So comprehending, learning Torah causes them an extraordinary delight, pleasure. Being absorbed in the energy of Hashem, which is Torah, causes them a very profound a joy and inner serenity. Because in the Garden of Eden, you feel vividly what is godliness, what is Torah, and so forth. Here, that openness, that exposure of what Torah is, or davening, or a mitzvah, is not felt. So that's as far as the feeling, the delight. But the oneness, the relationship is identical. Here, as it is in the Garden of Eden, when a Jew learns a blat gemara, when a Jew goes ahead to daven ma'ariv, he's in the Garden of Eden. His soul is now totally Hashem's. He melts away within godliness. A few months ago, I heard a story from an old chassid who's today in his 90s, Kabbali Ayanar. His name is Reb Shia Korf. And I visited his home a few months ago, and he related to me the following story that he experienced. The system among the Chabad Rebbes was that following their long Chabad discourses, that they would communicate usually on Shabbos or Yom Tov. Most times it was on Friday night. So Shabbos morning, before davening, very early in the morning, there was a group known as the Chayzrim, the brilliant young men who memorized the discourse that usually occupied several hours. They would go into the room of the Rebbe, and they would repeat the entire discourse in his presence, and he would correct them. and sometimes explain a few passages. So when they finished the review, they knew the discourse very well, and then they would repeat it again and again and transcribe it, and so on and so forth. And a lot of the discourses that the original manuscripts of the Rebbes themselves did not survive, or they didn't write it, we have from those manuscripts that the Chazrim, that the reviewers, the memorizers transcribed. It was one year, I think it was 1926 or 1927, in Leningrad, which is actually the same city that the Alter Rebbe was imprisoned. Petersburg, after the revolution, its name was changed to Leningrad, because the communists had to get rid of any memory of Peter. Everything changed to Lenin, so it became Leningrad. And it was a very dangerous time, and there was only one man present at Shabbos at the discourse who would memorize it. And this was this young man, who was then a young man, Reb Shia Korf. He actually authored a book on Tanya as well. It's called Likutei Biurim, a commentary on Tanya. Now, during the discourse, the previous Lubavitcher Rebbe analyzed at length what Gan Eden is, what the Garden of Eden is, from a spiritual level. And he was reviewing the discourse in front of the Rebbe. It wasn't Shabbos morning. It was, I believe, Sunday morning already. Shabbos morning, the Rebbe couldn't do it. They didn't have the time for it. In middle, there was a knock on the door, and one of the secretaries came in, and he said, there's an emergency telephone call from Moscow concerning a very pressing issue that was connected to the entire Russian Jewry and some new decree of the Bolsheviks, the communists, and so forth. So the secretary informed the Rebbe about the details of the issue. So he told Rabbi Korf, Reb Shia, he said, we'll take a break for a few moments. And as he stood up to leave the room, to go to the room where there was a telephone, he sighed and he said, Fun Gan Eden in Gehenim. From Garden of Eden into Purgatory, because the discourse was discussing Gan Eden. He was out for like 10 minutes. He came back into the room and he turned to him and he said, Un itzte kurik in Gan Eden. And now let's go back into the Garden of Eden. So the Alter Rebbe is saying, and he continued reviewing the Maimer. This was the previous Rebbe, the Friedrich Rebbe in Russia in the 20s. So the Alter Rebbe is saying that a true experience of Yiddishkeit by the Jew is surrendering your soul, letting go of everything else. I don't know. I could try to find out, but I don't know. Zog de Alter Rebbe, Zehu shetiknu betchilas berchus hasharcha kaidem atfilah. This is why it was ordained that one recite at the beginning of the morning blessings before davening. Elekai neshama v'chuli, ata nefachta chuli, v'ata asid litla mimeni, chuli. Each morning, the Gemara says in Brachas, Daf Samach, it's printed in all the Sidurim each morning, the beginning of all of the morning blessings that we recite each morning before davening begins as follows. Alakai neshama shenasata bi tahirihi, ata varasa, ata yitzarta, ata nefachta bi, vata meshamra bekir bi, vata asid litla mimeni. The soul, Hashem, that you gave into me, that you have given me, is pure. You created it, you formed it, you breathed it into me, you preserve it within me, v'ata asid litla meni, and you will take it away from me. And he concludes that therefore, kol zman shanasham avikir b'maydani lefonach, as long as the soul is within me, I offer thanks to you, Hashem. Zagdal terebe kalaymar. This is to say, and when he says a kolaymar, he's always coming to answer a question, because the apparent question in this passage is, why is it important to emphasize that Hashem is going to take away the soul? The Jew wakes up in the morning after a deep slumber, and he thanks Hashem after contemplating what has occurred. I'm breathing. Hashem has just given me a soul. This soul is pure, is holy, is sacred. I thank Hashem. Why is it so important that you are going to take away the soul from me? Zogdal to Rabbi Kalaymar, this means, Me'achar sha'at ha'nafachta bi, since you have breathed it into me, va'at ha'asid litlam emeni, and you will eventually take it from me, l'chein therefore, me'at ha'ani meisro machzir ilach. Therefore, as of now, I hand it over and return it to you. L'yachad ha'bachduscha, to unite it with your oneness, ukamay shekasav. As the psalmist expressed it in Tehillim Perik Chafei, Elecha Hashem nafshi yasa, to you, O God, I lift my soul, I surrender and give away my soul. What the Alter Rebbe is saying is that this addition ingrains in the soul of the Jew the foundation and the theology behind the entire service of the day. When we wake up in the morning, we start davening. But the first thing before davening is we recite the blessings, the Berachas Hashach. And the beginning of them is this prayer, or this blessing. And in this blessing, the Jew inculcates, affirms, and gets in touch with the core foundation of his entire relationship with the truth of life and with Hashem. What is he saying? This soul was yours, is yours. It's pure. You created it. You breathed it into me. Eventually, it's again going to be yours. You're going to take it away. And therefore, now, let me give it over to you. In other words, when the Jew wakes up in the morning, when we wake up in the morning, instinctively, naturally, we experience ourselves as physical human beings. We experience our bodily impulses, cravings, urges. We're hungry, we're thirsty, we need to wash up. We feel ourselves as extremely biological creatures. Every ordinary person who wakes up, the Beinoni, who wakes up, immediately senses his or her animalistic consciousness. And therefore, the Jew says, Elokai Neshama. In Elokai Neshama, I remember who I am. Who am I? We're learning chapter 41 of Tanya, and the honest, sincere person asks the question, who is he talking to? Love, intense love, burning love, self-sacrifice, every morning before davening, you're a servant, you're a child, and so forth. Who are you talking to? Who are you addressing? The Alter Rebbe acknowledges this, and he says, without the Elokai Neshama, you have a very good question. Say Elokai Neshama. Elokai Neshama, remember who you are. You have to remember your inner identity. And this is what the Jew says. Before I was born, I was totally one with Hashem. My soul was melted away, so to speak, like wax in a candle in the oneness of Hashem. In the future, my soul is again going to be one with Hashem because that is its true identity. To use the soul for something else is a betrayal of its innate character. It wasn't like that before. It's not going to be like that afterwards. The soul essentially is a godly creature. The soul needs transcendence. The soul is transcendental. The soul is one with Hashem. That's what it was always. That's what it's always going to be. So now I have the amount of years in which this soul is in a physical body. So the Jew says, if that's the case, so now I'm also going to be who I really am. Remain one with Hashem. And therefore this Jew says, Me'ata, from now, let me already give it over to you to make it one with you. So in other words, the soul, essentially what the Jew is saying is, my intimate self, you could say it in the description for in Yiddish is the Jew is telling to himself, Ich bin nicht kein Elam Hazenik. I am not a corporal, biological, self-oriented creature. We have those elements, there's no question about it. Alter Rebbe addresses those elements throughout the Tanya. But on a deeper level, this is not my identity. I was never like this. I'm not going to be like this in the future. However, in this world, we can present our souls with an alternative definition of reality and with an alternative lifestyle, which is essentially what the Jew does when he sins or even when he just wastes time. He presents to the soul another definition of reality. So in Elokai Neshama, he's saying, I remember who I am. I know the history of my soul. I know its future. So I know what I'm going to do with it at the present moment. What? Give it up and connect it with the oneness of Hashem, which is what it really is. It's interesting, his expression, Yachada b'achduscha, to connect it with your oneness. It should be bound to unite it with your oneness, which means, as the Alter Rebbe explained earlier, Hashem is one. That's his definition of reality. Reality on its truest level is godliness. Interesting. It's interesting, yeah. You're saying that's why some people connect Asher Yotzer with this. Now, the nature of reality essentially is the oneness of Hashem. It's just because of the opaqueness and the veil discussed earlier in Tanya, we don't sense reality from this point of view. But the soul is in tune with this truth. For the soul, godliness, that is the only definition of reality. And every Jew experiences that soul. So in the morning, you tune in to your inner spirituality, and because of that, you're ready right away to let go and allow your soul to connect. V'hainu, how do I do this? Ayidei yiskashus machshavti b'machshavticha. Through binding my thought, the Jew says, with your thought, Hashem's thought, v'diburi b'diburcha, and my speech with your speech, by means of the letters of Torah and davening, which I utter and comprehend. This is how I get its soul in tune back with its true essence.